Welcome to Circulation on the Run, your weekly podcast summary and backstage pass to the journal and its editors. We're your co-hosts. I'm Dr. Carolyn Lam, Associate Editor from the National Heart Center and Duke National University of Singapore.
And I'm Dr. Greg Hunley, Associate Editor, Director of the Poly Heart Center at VCU Health in Richmond, Virginia.
Greg, today's feature paper is one of those really, really landmark papers that really advance our understanding of nitric oxide signaling. And it's about red blood cell and endothelial eNOS and how they independently regulate circulating nitric oxide metabolites and blood pressure. A real, real must. But let's go on and look at the other papers in this issue first. Greg, you want to go first?
You bet, Carolyn. I'm going to grab a cup of coffee. And my first paper is from Professor Nathan Mouton from Hôpital Louis Pradel, Hospice Civil de Lyon. Carolyn, these authors hypothesize that colchicine, a potent anti-inflammatory agent, may reduce infarct size and left ventricular remodeling at the acute phase of STEMI. And so to address this hypothesis, they performed a double-blind, multi-center trial and randomly assigned patients admitted for a first episode of STEMI, referred for primary PTCA, to receive oral colchicine, 2 mg loading dose, followed by 0.5 milligrams twice a day, or matching placebo from admission to day 5. And the primary efficacy outcome was infarct size determined by cardiovascular magnetic resonance imaging at 5 days. And the relative left ventricular end diastolic volume change at 3 months and infarct size at 3 months was also assessed by cardiac MRI, and these were secondary outcomes.
Nice. Okay, so what were the results?
Right, Carolyn. So 192 patients were enrolled, 101 in the colchicine group and 91 in the controls. And as a result of this trial, the oral administration of high-dose colchicine at the time of reperfusion and for 5 days thereafter did not reduce infarct size assessed by cardiac MRI. And so, Carolyn, the clinical implications of these results suggest that other studies exploring the timing, pharmacokinetics, and dose response of colchicine, as well as other anti-inflammatory agents, are needed to identify an effective method to reduce infarct size and limit remodeling in this group of patients.
Wow, it's just such a rich field, huh? All this about colchicine. Well, our next paper is a pre-specified sub-analysis of the randomized EAST-FNET-4 trial. And the sub-analysis assessed the effect of systematic early rhythm control therapy, that is using antiarrhythmic drugs or catheter ablation, compared to usual care, which means allowing rhythm control therapy to improve symptoms in patients with heart failure. And this was defined in the sub-analysis as the presence of heart failure symptoms of New York Heart Association status 2 to 3, or a left ventricular ejection fraction of less than 50%. Now, the authors, led by Dr. Kirchhoff at University Heart and Vascular Center, UKE in Hamburg, Germany, included 798 patients in this sub-analysis, of whom 442 had HFpEF, 211 had heart failure with mid-range ejection fraction, and 132 had HFrEF. Over a median of 5.1 years of follow-up, the composite primary outcome of cardiovascular death, stroke, or hospitalization for worsening heart failure or for acute coronary syndrome occurred less often in patients randomized to early rhythm control therapy compared with patients randomized to usual care. And this was not altered by heart failure status with an interaction p-value of 0.6. Left ventricular function, symptoms, and quality of life improved equally in both treatment strategies.
Wow, Carolyn, a lot of information here. So what can we take away from this?
Well, let's remember that this is a sub-analysis, albeit pre-specified, of that randomized trial of the EAST-FNET-4 trial. But nonetheless, the data supports a treatment strategy of rhythm control therapy with antiarrhythmic drugs or ablation within a year of diagnosing atrial fibrillation in patients with signs and symptoms of heart failure to reduce cardiovascular outcomes.
Very nice, Carolyn. So, Carolyn, my next paper pertains to alarmin interleukin-1 alpha, and it comes to us from Dr. Timotheus Speer at Saarland University. So, Carolyn, alarmin interleukin 1 alpha is expressed in a variety of cell types promoting sterile systemic inflammation. And the aim of the present study was to examine the role of alarmin interleukin 1 alpha in mediating inflammation in the setting of acute myocardial infarction and chronic kidney disease.
Wow, sterile inflammation. It's a really hot topic now. So what did these authors find?
Right, Carolyn. So we're going to call alarmin interleukin 1 alpha. Let's just call it IL-1 alpha. And so increased IL-1 alpha surface expression on monocytes from patients with acute myocardial infarction and patients with chronic kidney disease was found to be associated with cardiovascular events. Next, IL-1 alpha itself served as an adhesion molecule, mediating leukocyte endothelial adhesion. And finally, abrogation of IL-1 alpha prevented inflammation after myocardial infarction and ameliorated chronic kidney disease in vivo.
Wow. So what does this mean clinically?
Right, Carolyn. So perhaps targeted therapeutic inhibition of IL-1 alpha might represent a novel anti-inflammatory treatment strategy in patients with myocardial infarction and in patients with chronic kidney disease.
Wow, amazing. Thanks, Greg. Well, in today's issue, there's also an exchange of letters between Drs. Lother and Filippatos on finerenone and risk of hyperkalemia in CKD and type 2 diabetes. There's an On My Mind paper by Dr. Sattler on the single-cell immunology in cardiovascular medicine. Do we know yet what we don't know?
And then, Carolyn, from the mailbag, a research letter from Professor Warens entitled Atrial-Specific LK-Beta-1 Knockdown represents a novel mouse model of atrial cardiomyopathy with spontaneous atrial fibrillation. Well, Carolyn, how about we turn our attention to those red blood cells and endothelial nitric oxide synthase?
Yeah, can't wait.
Well, welcome to this episode of Circulation on the Run, our podcast where we have an opportunity to speak with authors of important papers that are appearing in the Journal of Circulation. I'm pleased to introduce myself. My name is Mercedes Carnathon, Professor and Vice Chair of Preventive Medicine at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine. And I'm pleased today to invite our guest author, Miriam Cortese-Krott, who is on the faculty of the University of Dusseldorf and a guest professor at the Karolinska Institute in Stockholm. And we have with us as well the other associate editor who handled the piece for Circulation, Dr. Charlie Lowenstein from Johns Hopkins University. So welcome to each of you this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. I'm really excited to jump right into this piece, Miriam. Can you tell me a little bit about the rationale for carrying out the study, why you pursued it?
The reason is because when I was working as a postdoc, I had to isolate an enzyme from red blood cells, which is very, very difficult. And if you know, this enzyme is endothelial nitric oxide synthase, which produces nitric oxide. And actually, the red blood cell is full of the worst enemy of nitric oxide, which is hemoglobin. So actually, everybody, when I was talking about my project, everybody was asking, why are you doing that? So I was actually able to isolate and the enzyme and look at activity and be sure that the enzyme was fine. But the function of this enzyme was absolutely unknown. So, and the only way to study proteins in red blood cells is to make modification in the bone marrow of the mice, so in the erythroid cells, because you cannot, of course, if there are cells without nucleus, you don't have any chance to modify them in culture or something like that. So the only way was to generate mice with modification specifically in the red blood cells. And I had the chance to generate red cell specific ENOS knockout mice. And of course, as a control, endothelial specific ENOS knockout mice by using the CRE-LOXP technology. And with this technology, I could really understand what's happening to the physiology of the mouse if you remove this protein from the red blood cells. And this was the whole idea.
You know, thank you so much. It was really exciting for me to read this piece. We are on opposite ends of the scientific inquiry spread, as I'm an epidemiologist who does things at the population level. And you're, you know, identifying things at the basic science level. I thought the paper was extremely well written, and I'd encourage people to dig in, even if you're unfamiliar. And in part, that's because you provided such a great explanation of how your findings are used and how they're relevant to the process. Do you mind sharing a little bit about your findings and how you expect that they will be used by our scientific community?
I think the main finding of this paper is that if you remove ENOS from the red blood cells, the mice are hypertensive, have hypertension. And this is completely something that you actually would not expect, as I told you that indeed red cells are full of the enemy of nitric oxide that removes it immediately. So you can ask yourself how it is possible. But I think the key finding in this paper was that I also generated the opposite model. So I created a model, a conditional ENOS knockout model, where you can decide in which tissue you want to have your enzyme. And of course, I applied for red blood cells. And what you see in this model is that you start from a global knockout mouse with hypertension. You reintroduce the ENOS just in the red blood cells. You have normal tension. So this means, this is the main finding. You have a switch in the red blood cells, which is the enzyme ENOS, which it's behaving in a completely different way, clearly, as compared to the vessel wall ENOS, and still regulating blood pressure.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I think this is the point at which I like to turn to the associate editor who handled the piece. Charlie, you and I don't get to talk as often, given the diversity of work that we each pursue. But, you know, Charlie, tell me a little bit about what excited you about this piece.
Thanks, Mercedes. So I love this piece. I thought, Miriam, your article is so great. So a couple of thoughts. One is nitric oxide and nitric oxide synthase are so important in biology and medicine. Nitric oxide regulates blood pressure, it regulates neurotransmission, it regulates inflammation. And this is true not only in the lab, looking at cells and mice, but also in humans. So genetic variants in the endothelial nitric oxide synthase gene, or NOS3, are associated with risks for diseases like coronary artery disease. So ENOS is just so important in biology and medicine. And now, some ancient history. When I was a cardiology fellow about 100 years ago, I worked in the lab that first purified nitric oxide synthase proteins, and we cloned two of the nitric oxide synthase genes. That was in the lab of Dr. Solomon Snyder at Johns Hopkins back in the 1700s. So when we cloned the nitric oxide synthase genes, when we and others did, we made a huge mistake. We chose the names for these isoforms from the tissue where they first isolated. So we called the brain nitric oxide synthase NNOS because it's in neurons. Macrophages make NOS, we called it MacNOS. And in endothelial cells, we called the nitric oxide synthase ENOS for endothelial NOS. But in the last 20 years, lots of investigators have found these isoforms are in other cells, not just the original cells of discovery. And so Miriam's question is just so important. Which cells make endothelial NOS, also called NOS3? So that's the history. Now, what Miriam has discovered is just so important. And I was so fascinated by her work because, as she just said, she made two amazing discoveries. One, red blood cells make endothelial nitric oxide synthase. And that's been a controversy for a long time. Some people have said yes, some no. And Miriam made the definitive answer. Yes, red blood cells make ENOS. And secondly, she's discovered so much about the physiology of NO coming from red blood cells. The nitric oxide that's made inside red blood cells regulates blood pressure. What a magical, interesting, and important finding. So that's a little bit about the history. Nitric oxide and NOS are important in medicine. The people who originally cloned and purified the nitric oxide synthase isoforms named them after the tissue in which they discovered. And Miriam has made a major discovery that it's not only endothelial cells that make nitric oxide, but also red blood cells.
You know, thank you so much for that summary. And I guess I would have thought perhaps this was something of an elixir of youth, because if you've been working in this area for 200 plus years, and Miriam, you started working on this as part of your dissertation work, you both have a lot of insight and background on where we've been and what the advances are. Miriam, can you tell me a little bit about how you'd like to see these findings used by the scientific community?
I think I would like that the scientific community would use my mice first, because I think it's, as Charles said, it's not only red cells that express ENOS, and it's not only endothelial cells. There are other cells producing ENOS, and the function in the other cells is not known, even in leukocytes, even that they have iNOS, of course, but also have ENOS. So you can use my mice, since it's a flux model, you can choose whatever you want, which cell you want, and then knock it in and knock it out. So this is one thing that I think the community could really do. I cannot do everything, so I'm happy to give my mice away. And the second thing is, I would like to that in particular the clinical community would see this link between hematology and cardiovascular disease. This is something that was started, of course, with there are studies looking at anemia and cardiovascular disease, but these studies have sometimes some issues. I, of course, cannot speak as a basic scientist. I cannot speak about huge clinical trials, but I think this link exists and exists at the molecular level, and it can be a target for pharmacological therapy. So I think this is what I would like to transport with this study to the clinical community and the basic science community.
You know, I think this is the point at which, Charlie, I turn it to you, because you really stand at the intersection of both of those communities. What questions do you have for Miriam going forward as you think about spreading the word on this important work?
So Miriam's discovery is just so important, and she now has the tools to help answer really, really important questions. How is nitric oxide made in red blood cells? How is it stored in red blood cells? How is it transported throughout the body in red blood cells? What is the chemistry of nitric oxide when it is stored, when it combines with oxygen, when it forms nitrite and nitrate? How is it released from red blood cells? How is it targeted from a red blood cell to the vasculature? So there are these great basic science questions that Miriam and her colleagues are now poised to answer. So there is the science part of it. Then there's the medicine part of it, because Miriam's mice and her great discovery have really huge implications for medicine. And so the question is, how can we use NO? How can we deliver it? How can we target NO to human tissues? How can we turn on erythrocyte nitric oxide synthase? How can we turn it off? Because there are all these medical diseases where too much nitric oxide is bad, like in sepsis, or inadequate amounts don't protect the vasculature, like atherosclerosis. Then there are all these other interesting questions. When we transfuse red blood cells, sometimes if you transfuse aged red blood cells, it's not good. You can harm people. Maybe we can load up or activate ENOS in stored red blood cells and then help deliver more NO to patients who need red blood cells. So there are all these fascinating medical questions that we can look at based on Miriam's really important discovery.
Well, thank you so much. You know, we're coming to the end of this wonderful and informative podcast. And I guess I'd just ask Miriam, do you have anything else you'd like our listeners to know about your work and about the findings from this study?
I would like people know that hard work helps a lot, and that you have to believe in what you are doing, and the quality of your science will, at the end, will bring their true discoveries. So I think it's important, specifically for young women in science, that having this message too. So the science per se must be excellent, and to pursue it, you need a lot of work, but then the work goes to a good end.
Oh, Miriam, thank you so much for that inspirational note. You know, the hard work that scientists need, the persistence across one's career and building from earlier discoveries and bringing those forward through one's career are always critically important. And so, you know, I hope everyone has really enjoyed this episode and this opportunity to hear from Dr. Cortese Krott. Miriam, you've done such wonderful work, and thank you as well, Charlie, for your insights about the intersection of this work with clinical care and basic science.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much for joining us today in this episode of Circulation on the Run.
This program is copyright of the American Heart Association 2021. The opinions expressed by speakers in this podcast are their own and not necessarily those of the editors or of the American Heart Association. For more, visit ahajournals.org.